And so at the Lower West Terrace Tunnel, he saw that there was an officer drug out into the crowd. He could not get to that officer, so he went to aid another officer that was on the ground. Every time he went to pick up that officer, they charged him with assault. And he, off to his left, he tried to save Roseanne Boylan. He's pointing at her and pointing at Metropolitan Police Officer Lila Morris. And he yells at her to stop killing that girl. And he was protecting the officer. The officer and him slid down the stairs together, and as he's over top of him, the officer says, "Get off of me." And he says, "I'm helping you." And he said, I know, help me up."
Welcome to Worldview Matters, discussing controversial issues, discerning current events, defending biblical Christianity. No topic off limits. And now, here's your host, David Fiorazzo.
So friends, most of you know about J6 and what happened. The left manufactured a crisis, and radicals are good at doing that. And what we're going to be talking about today is some of the details that you probably never heard if you haven't followed very conservative news sources. And I'll be honest with you, when I went through these details again, I was angry. Because the truth is still coming out little by little. And that's why we're so blessed to have a former J6 political prisoner pardoned by President Trump, thank God, Colton McAbee with us. And he's going to tell more of the story of what you just saw in that video. Colton, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being willing to tell your story. We know I can imagine, and I don't know what it feels like. But I can imagine it must be just all kinds of emotions. But just watching that clip again, what were you feeling and thinking when you're watching what happened on J6?
Yeah, well, going over that clip again, first, there was a lot of beeps, and it's not my proudest moment having to be censored. I do apologize for that, and I am embarrassed for that part. But me trying to help an officer and me trying to help Roseanne, I am not sorry for that. It did bring back a lot of strong feelings. I think it will always will. I tried to help the officer. We both got dragged into the crowd, and then also tried to help Roseanne, who ultimately she died because of, well, she got trampled, and then there was blunt force trauma by Officer Morris. Reliving that just kind of, it's not a good feeling.
Yeah. Well, a woman lost her life in that case. Others have died, on that day. And as a result, Ashley Babbitt got shot. But has there, to your knowledge, has there been any justice or accountability for these deaths?
As far as I know, is the Babbitt family and the government have settled out of court. And now Roseanne is actually getting a lot of attention with other media, with like specifically Greg Kelly, with I think he's on Newsmax, and then all over social media. So she is now coming to light. I've made it my mission to talk about her every chance I can, because I did go hands on her. So I am thankful for that. I have spoken with the family once while I was in jail. I wrote them a letter, just basically apologizing that I couldn't save her, and they wrote a letter back, and it was a positive experience on that account. And then hopefully one day we can link up and I can just see them face to face and just tell them for real how sorry I am.
Yeah. Unnecessary. But here we are today talking about this. So let's start with a little bit of good news. And that was recently this year, early this year, January, I believe. Jeff, bring up the Blaze headline that you were pardoned by President Trump. And Colton, did you know that was coming? and tell us about that process. And then we'll go back. We'll talk about some of the conditions and some of the treatment that you received, which is just, again, infuriating. But there's the good news right there. That's one of the good headlines. Best day of my life other than my wedding. So, Colton, share whatever you'd like about how you heard the news and what you knew when you got pardoned.
Yeah, so, you know, Trump was always dancing around the issue of pardoning us. And then on that day, I actually had visitation. So my wife and my mother-in-law were actually up in Minnesota where I was being housed at. And, you know, before I went into the visitation room, I got called into an officer's office and said, hey, you know, we've got word that this might happen. We've already got the paperwork ready for you. And I'm like, all right, let's go. So I had a great, you know, visitation. I don't think I said maybe more than 10 words to my family, but we were watching the inauguration the entire time. And then my cellmate, Bob, he was also the photographer, comes up to me and he said, hey, I heard on the radio that there's going to be a blanket pardon, man. You're getting out of here. I said, okay, cool, whatever. Like, I want to hear it coming from Trump himself. And so it was till about 5 o'clock that evening that when he was at the Coliseum, he said, we're going to go back to the White House and pardon the January Sixers. That's when, you know, I was like, wow, this is gone. He actually said it. It's going to happen. And then not even 5 minutes later, my name was called over the intercom to pack up. And I was out of there by, wow. I think, 11:30.
Wow. Well, for most of us, I mean, it's hard to imagine you even being there in the first place. Jeff, go back to the main page on Sarah's website. Now, Sarah is your wife, Sarah Maccabee. We've got a lot of information from her website. There you are. 6 felonies, 1 misdemeanor. You were trying to help Roseanne Boylan. You were trying to help another officer. So explain how you came to be arrested for that and you were sentenced.
Yeah. So every time I touched the officer, they wanted to say it was an assault charge. So I, as you saw in the video, there was a first officer that went down. And that video is actually kind of slow compared to real life. Cause that he was down in front of me within 2 seconds, but I did see the officer that I jumped to and tried to help. I did see him go down. And so I did what my training told me to do. You know, I autopilot went over there, tried to help him up. And every time I did, I got either hit, sprayed, or yelled at. And then the guy that was pulling on him ended up being my co-defendant. I don't even know who he is. And he pulled us both down. So that's one assault charge. That's the assault charge with deadly dangerous weapons, because I was wearing those gloves, as you can see in that picture. And they said those were brass knuckles, and they're not. They're just regular motorcycle gloves with plastic knuckles. So there's that. And then this specific camera angle that you're showing right now is from another officer who came out of the police line and took his baton and, you know, pushed me in the ribs, tried to push me down the stairs. Jeez. And I pushed him back. And so that was a lapse in judgment. I'll give you that. But it was also my training to separate myself from a perceived threat. So there's the other assault charge. Then they said I have civil disorder because Safeway couldn't make a delivery. I mean, that's the exact terminology that they used. And then, you know, you have all your other remaining or entering and grounds with deadly dangerous weapon, which were my gloves again, and then trespassing, which, you know, I mean, there was no signs when I got there. But, I mean, obviously hindsight's 20/20, and, you know, should I have been up there? Probably not, but I was, and I can't change that.
So you were a sheriff at the time? You were in law enforcement at that time on January 6th?
Yeah, I was active deputy sheriff.
Okay, so why did you decide to go to the Capitol that day?
Yeah, so in December of 2020, I actually got in a wreck. I think it was 2 days after Christmas. And so it actually gave me time off. A buddy that, you know, that I went with, he asked me to go. And so we both went. I wanted to see Trump speak. I've never seen him speak in person. I've never even, you know, been at a political rally in my life. So I went there with the sole intention of hearing Trump speak. I didn't know anything was going to happen at the Capitol until Trump said, let's go to the Capitol and peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard. And so I'm thinking, hey, there's another rally over there, because he said he's going to be there with us. So I thought something else was going to happen. And I mean, ultimately something did happen, but not the way I thought it was.
So you were there and you witnessed a lot of things in addition to what you experienced firsthand with that officer and with Roseanne Boylan. But you said in the article over on your wife's website, on your, it's a page there that you guys, you can access over at sarahmaccabee.us. It says that you were watching, you witnessed you women and elderly Americans being attacked with clubs, and all you could do was try to shield them from the violence. So elderly people and women were being struck. Is that correct?
Yeah. So the main target for the crowd, before the crowd took over the Capitol, the police were targeting the elder men and women, women in general. And there's actually some children in the crowd being pepper sprayed. And so what they did was they would pepper spray the front of the line and then shoot tear gas in the back of the line. And so both of the line, like both sides were squeezing in on everybody, which was causing chaos. Mm. And then you had several officers who would break the police line, go in and tase somebody or tackle somebody, and then go back inside the police line to safety. And me being law enforcement, you know, I can see both sides. I can understand why certain things were going on, but I can't wrap my head around of why they did other things, as in try to squeeze everybody in the middle, not deter anybody, like not push them back, you know, before anything happened. And why did they give up ground? That's the question where I still ask myself, why do you give up ground? Why did you even stoke the chaos? Because when I was there, there was no chaos. Everybody was waving their flags, singing, praying, you know, chanting. Mm-hmm. And then you had an officer, Sergeant Tao, come in on the scene and started just doing tear gas, 40 millimeter rockets or whatever you want to call it, just all the munitions that he could. And he actually stole other officers' tasers to tase people. So he was the main instigator of stoking up the crowd.
In your opinion, do you think he was given marching orders? Him and many others who were trying to stoke this?
I think he saw an opportunity and seized on it because, I mean, the command staff failed them. You hear it on several body cameras where they're like, hey, we were set up, as the officers talking that way. Hmm. You also had other officers trying to de-escalate. But I think Sergeant Tao saw his opportunity to, you know, be a hero and, you know, try to take one, take a couple people out in the meantime. Because I know from experience, after, you know, doing use of forces inside of a prison, yeah, your adrenaline's running. And then you go back and you talk about it with your buddies and like, hey, I did this or I did that. Let's, you know, armchair quarterback it or see what happened, you know, or talk all this bravado. And so I think that's what he was doing. He talked himself up. His command staff, his command sergeant or whoever, lieutenant. I mean, he didn't try to stop him. In fact, he encouraged him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I said, men, so elderly men, women, and children were targeted.
So what can you tell us about what some of the videos we've seen with the police seemingly opening up doors or opening up fences or barricades and letting people in? Was that because the crowd was getting too compact or what? Because we have other theories on that.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I really don't have an answer for that. So I was on the west side where they would call it the Thunderdome and where the brawling was. On the east side is where technically the doors were opened. I think after looking at a lot of video, so there were several people who broke into the windows, climbed through the windows. But I think my theory is that they were the officers ended up just letting them in. And even after that, I mean, they people were respectful. They from the videos I've seen, people were respectful. They stayed between the velvet ropes. They, you know, asked officers, hey, which way can we go? Fist bumping, taking selfies with officers. I mean, in a way, I feel like it's kind of a setup. And then somewhat organic at the same time.
Okay, so we're going to have to take a brief pause. And friends, you can get more at sarahmaccabee.us/Colton. And I've got another, this now I'm getting this information from the website there, and there's a lot of details on how you were treated, Colton, and it makes me angry. I'm sure a lot of people be upset hearing this as well, but we want to know because, again, it was not reported on, and it was so hard to get the truth and get good information on this. Plus, we'll talk about Roseanne Boylan and how people can pray for you and help coming up on Worldview Matters.
Introducing Patriot Mobile, the wireless carrier that stands with you. We are committed to supporting the values that make our nation great. With affordable plans and reliable nationwide coverage, Patriot Mobile is not just a wireless service. It's a call to action for those who believe in the American dream.
Get free activation now with promo code David.
Give her chest compressions and they drag her away like she was a dead animal. They literally pick her up by her ankles and drag her away. And he's standing there in such disbelief of what he had just witnessed. And a third officer saw the entire situation go down within those 7 minutes and thanked him twice on camera for his help that day.
Thank you.
Don't spray me, man. I'm not freaking hurting anybody. I'm out.
Okay, so friends, that was a video from J6 that day, and that was Roseanne Boylan that they were taking out at that point, who Colton McAbee tried to help. So one of the things, do you want to, before I ask you about the testimony from an officer that you helped, could you tell us anything more about that video that we just saw?
Yeah, for sure. So after I was dragged down the stairs with the officer and I actually helped that officer back up into the police line, I immediately went to see where Roseanne was. And as you can see right there, I am actually digging through a bag, but also checking for a pulse. And I couldn't find a pulse. So we ended up taking her back to the police line for efforts. We got pepper sprayed for that. And then you heard, hey, I need compressions. And I was taken over at the time and I was ripped off by another protester and they dragged Roseanne, you know, through the police line like a dead deer is the best way I could describe it. It's still kind of rough. I mean, to even see it and talk about it. But I do think that she needs to be talked about.
Yes.
That officer right there, I mean, yeah, he thanked me. He actually protected me from the crowd and from his officers. And you heard me ask if I could go in that way, which is going through the police line inside the Capitol, because I was actually being called a traitor because I wasn't trying to hit police officers because I was just standing there, you know, and the crowd behind me. Like, so even when I was on top of the officer, when we got dragged down the stairs, they called me a traitor because I protected that officer. So I didn't feel safe going back through the crowd, but obviously they wouldn't let me inside. I was going to accept my fate no matter what, if they would have arrested me going inside, trying to get to safety. But it's just like, I don't know what happened, but an elderly lady came out of nowhere and the crowd parted and actually brought me down through the crowd and through safety. So I call her my guardian angel for, you know, a reason. And, you know, I just feel like, you know, I'm meant to, you know, to see things, talk about things and experience things. And through my experience, I can actually educate other people.
So Roseanne Boylan, say her name. Hopefully the story will be continue to be told and exposed. But let's go back to that officer that you helped. Is he the one, did he give a testimony in court that kind of defended you and yet you were still convicted? Can you explain that?
Yeah, so during trial, my the prosecution and my attorney both got an email from this officer, and I want to, you know, I won't say his name because he's still, you know, he's still working. I don't want to get him in trouble. But he actually emailed and said, "Hey, like, if this is the person who I think it is, I actually thanked him. He actually helped us out." So he went on, you know, to the stand and he testified, and I mean he basically corroborated everything that I was saying. I mean, he said exactly what happened and what I've been saying since day one. and the jury still found me guilty on everything.
So let me go back now to the information that's on your wife's page or website on your page. You were held as a political prisoner within your own country. You faced harsh treatment, sleeping on floors in holding areas, assaulted while in custody, transported across six facilities, subjected to prolonged solitary confinement. Sarah and her family were denied visitation for 597 days, seeing you only briefly behind glass after 26 months. If that's true, and I trust that it is, what reasons were you given, Colton, that your family couldn't visit you and that you were put in solitary or treated the way you were?
Yeah, so with the no visitation and solitary, that was due to COVID. They blamed COVID for all that until towards the end of the 26 months. And then the other solitary is that I was shipped around, and it was for my safety because I was high profile, also being an officer. So I really didn't have any problems going through any of the jails that I went through except through DC. And it wasn't the problems with the inmates. It was problems with the officers. And they didn't like us because we were Trump supporters. I mean, we were the minority. We were white, Trump supporter, Christian males, when the majority were, black and Muslim. And that was with the officers. That wasn't with the inmates. The inmates actually liked us. So there was an incident where, I can't talk too much about it because I have an active lawsuit, but where I got pepper sprayed because I wouldn't wear a COVID mask while taking my medication. And, after that, I got shipped out to another jail, actually two other jails, and then I got shipped back after 8 months to DC.
So you went DC, Pennsylvania, Oklahoma, you were in a jail in Missouri, a prison in Minnesota. So you understand that they were really trying to do it to protect you? To move you around?
Well, so at the beginning, so it was two Kentucky jails at the beginning, and then Oklahoma, DC, two Virginias, back to DC.
Jeez.
And then once I got sentenced, I went from DC to Philadelphia, and then I made my way back to Oklahoma to make my way to Missouri. And then my final destination was Minnesota. And I've never been to Minnesota, but they decided to put me on the North Pole. It was freezing up there, but that's where I did my prison time. I don't think it's really safety. I think it's more of because my wife was actually talking out there and making a noise and actually getting the truth out, they were taking it out on me.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. So let's go to the jury rendering their verdict of guilty, convicting you to 70 months. You were fined $32,775. Is that true? And why? And did you pay that? Did you have to pay that? Is that still in a lawsuit?
Yeah, good question. So the conviction is because, no January 6er has gotten acquitted 100%. Only two of us, and they were only misdemeanors, I believe. Everybody else has been convicted on almost all charges. With the fine and restitution, even after the officer that I tried to help up said I never assaulted him, I got charged with serious bodily injury. And the judge said because I was around there and I allowed other people to assault the officer, I am now responsible for the $30,000+ for medical bills of that officer, me and two other of my co-defendants that I still not even met. And then with the fines and all this other stuff, I've only paid my felony fines, which is $619 of felony special assessment. And they actually took that out of my commissary while I was in prison. Even though the judge said I must pay 30 days after my release of prison. And so I fought that. I ultimately won. And then when I got pardoned, all that went away. I don't have to pay any fines, restitution. I do not get my money back that I paid, the $600. But I am also not a criminal. I'm not a convicted felon. With the pardon, the appeals court has overturned my conviction this year. I'm technically a free man with no record.
Thank God. But now this is where people can pray for you. You're trying to get your life back together again. You mentioned before we got on the podcast, you're going to a good church. Interesting link on your wife's website, January 6th, detainee, pens birthday letter to my future free self. You will not break. So mentally and physically, or just mentally, emotionally, brother, how are you doing and how can we pray for you?
Yeah, I mean, I have my good days and I have my rough days. I do my self-talk. I do pump myself up. As you know, referenced in that letter, I'm not going to break. I've been through way too much to break. So if you could pray for my, you know, obviously my mental health and stability as that. I also have some big things in the hopper right now. I won't go into detail, but I do have some big things coming up. Please pray that it does work and that I am safe when I go through these things, and that, you know, like the Lord blesses me and brings back tenfold of what I've lost.
Mm. Amen. We'll pray for you for your continued healing and that God would give you good success. And if one of these endeavors is getting the truth out there, more truth about what happened to you and your story, big amen for that. We'll pray for that. But I want to read a close here with what Sarah wrote. It says, Sarah believes you and many others were chosen for a time such as this, and their sacrifices are awakening a movement to fight for justice and freedom. And that is something that we can all agree needs to be done. Boy, so much needs to change in America, but one person and one story at a time. Brother, thank you so much for being on with us and sharing the details. Maybe we'll catch up with you in another maybe 3-6 months or whatever, find out what you're doing and if you're willing to come back. But thanks, Sarah, for us. She got us in touch with you. And so thanks, Colton. We really appreciate it. Any closing words, any thoughts?
Just thank you guys. God bless you guys. And, you know, I love all your supporters. Appreciate y'all.
Thank you. Oh, forgot to mention the website, the realj6.com. People think they can donate to J6 prisoners or former prisoners. Therealj6.com, right? They can do that?
I believe that. And then standinthegap.foundation.
Standinthegap.foundation. And you can get a lot more details too, friends, and get the truth, get involved, because the media didn't do their job, of course, like usual. Colton, God bless you. Thanks again for your time. Give your wife a hug for us.
Yes, sir. Thank you, guys. God bless.
Thank you. All right, guys, a very important story. And because we did not get the truth from the media all those several years, we need to put this out. So thanks for your prayers, for sharing the podcast. God bless you. And as always, keep speaking the truth about things that matter.